There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Hello, and welcome to NFL Live. Happy Halloween. We are getting our Toy Story on, in case you can't tell. We've got Rob Ninkovich, used to be known as Rob Ninkovich, Buzz Lightyear is with
us. Buzz Lightyear, that's right. Yes. Taking it serious now.
Yeah, this is very serious.
Very serious.
My partner in crime, Woody, a.k.a. Victor Cruz, Miss Bo Peep here. Hello, Miss Bo Peep. Josina Anderson, and I'm Wendy Nix, a.k.a. today anyway, Jesse.
Jesse.
And just when you thought it couldn't get any better, our Hall of Fame alien.
Oh, man. What is going on?
Steve Young is with us. Hello, Steve. All right, listen, football is serious business. You guys cut it out. We're going to talk about this first. You know what? Tom Brady dressed. He's not too important to dress up, apparently.
Okay.
But he couldn't practice today. So, and the reason is, of course, he refused to take off his helmet. He did not practice. That's the official designation because he refused to take it off. Okay, you know who did practice, though? And this is good news, or we expect him to practice this afternoon, and that is Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. He practiced yesterday, albeit in a limited fashion. Head coach Andy Reid says he's doing just a little bit more with every day that goes by. His status for the weekend, questionable at best, though. The Chiefs getting set for the Vikings, certainly a game they need to win. However, you've also got to balance, of course, his long-term future and health and a recurrence of that injury. So I'll start with you, Rob. What would you need to see to convince you that it's okay for Patrick Mahomes to play after just 2 weeks?
It'd be tough. I mean, he'd have to be completely able to get out of the pocket and do all the things that he's really good at. But, you know, I
just can't take him serious.
Sorry, go ahead.
Take me serious.
No, it's not a laughing matter. Go ahead.
It is not a laughing matter. You have to just look at this situation. It's not like they're playing in conference, right? Mm-hmm. So they're playing the Vikings, an NFC team. You know, so I would really just take it easy as far as pushing him back to playing so fast. 2 weeks, we know that the injury, I don't know, could be a little bit longer recovery. But as far as rushing him back, I think that's not smart.
Yeah, I think you just have to look at it and make sure that he's himself. You want to watch him and monitor him throughout practice and see if he's moving laterally with the same quickness and the same wherewithal that he does normally. And that's what you're looking for, not necessarily the throws and all that good stuff. You just want to make sure he's moving around the way you're used to seeing Patrick Mahomes move around out there at practice.
Yeah, on one hand, it's like you're trying to replicate max activity so you can get a really good gauge as to where he is. But at the same time, while you're doing that, he's not getting... You okay over there, Wendy?
Sorry.
She keeps looking at Rob.
I just got to get it out of my system.
It's the circle I have going on right now.
I mean, listen.
This doesn't sound like serious analysis.
No, it definitely does.
And on the other hand, you're like trying to make sure he has enough rest so that he properly heals, you know, from the what his ailment is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I would also like to add that it's his right knee, I do believe. So when you're a quarterback, you have to push off that leg. That's, like, really important for getting the ball down the field.
And he's right-handed, so that's his plant leg. That's what he does.
Exactly.
You know, that's the leg he's planning off to make all his throws.
Yep.
All right, listen, I want to ask Steve Young, who we saw earlier. Steve, obviously you were a quarterback who relied in part on your mobility. So are you comfortable with Patrick Mahomes playing if, in fact, he's not 100%, which I think at this point is almost a guarantee? But will you take a partial Patrick Mahomes?
Well, yeah, Wendy, I think the biggest issue is going to be, like, can this happen again? I mean, is the knee unstable? And if the doctor says, no, it's not unstable, there's no greater risk, then it's just the swelling and all the things around it, then you can take a little bit more risk. I get that. But if there's any chance that this could happen again, this is crazy that he's trying to play until he's 100%. This would be one of the great players of all time. Like, is it possible that his knee could be a problem starting, you know, and bother him for the next 5 years? If that's what we're talking about, then stop this madness. But if it's not, and it's just about swelling and all that, then test it, be careful. But my gosh, give it as much time as necessary so that you can finish and play in the playoffs when it matters and you'll be 100% in the end of December. So those are, I mean, only the doctor and he can tell us those things. But if any of that is at risk by pushing it today, that's nuts.
Well, it is. I mean, there's no question. Nobody wants to see any kind of long-term problem for Patrick Mahomes, least of all the Kansas City Chiefs. We will stay out west and talk about what a season it has been so far for the 49ers, who we know are one of two remaining unbeaten teams alongside the Patriots, off to their first 7-0 start since their 1990 campaign. Tonight's affair will feature the 2019 top two picks, Kyler Murray and then Nick Bosa, who is in no question a midseason favorite for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Murray will have his hands full against this ferocious San Francisco defense that has allowed the lowest QBR for opposing QBs and leads the NFL in total defense. A look at the injury report. The Niners run a lot, and running backs Matt Breida and Raheem Monster are listed as questionable, along with veteran tackle Joe Staley. The Cards are also nicked up at running back. David Johnson will not play, according to Adam Schefter, and Chase Edmonds will also miss tonight's game. We will go now to Arizona. Oh, man. I just got it together. This is ridiculous. Okay, listen, Duke Kaboom, a.k.a. Jeremy Fowler, joins us. And Jeremy, I don't know what I'm supposed to ask you because you look so silly. So, but I'll ask you this.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, okay, so just talk about the Cardinals, would you?
Well, Wendy, I just got done grooming my mustache and riding my bike through a ring of fire. I figured I would pop in here and deliver the news for you. So if there's one thing Duke Kaboom knows, that's crash courses. And the Cardinals defense just went through a serious crash course trying to get ready for this potent Niners rushing attack. I spoke with linebacker Jordan Hicks. He said that if you don't stop the Niners on first and second down, you are done. He said they'll line up in a formation and they could run a gazillion different plays through that formation, so you have to be ready. And the key is to stop George Kittle. They said if they got him in third and long, where he has to stay on the line of scrimmage and block instead of running 30 yards down the seam, burning them for big plays, then they are in good shape. They can let Chandler Jones and their guys get after it. And it's already bad enough for the Cardinals on offense with David Johnson likely out. Kenyon Drake's been here like 2.5 days. He's going to have to pop in and likely start for this team, while the Niners, Matt Breida, that running back I'm heard, is trending in the right direction. They hopeful that he can play. And then Emmanuel Sanders, Wendy, I will add, they've been thoroughly impressed with him. When they went on the trade market, they combed the market for receivers. They wanted three things: a guy who's proven, a guy who's a precise route runner, and a guy who's savvy. They believe he has all three, so they expect to expand his role today.
Okay, Duke, thank you. Listen, you've impressed me before, none more than today, Duke, so I know you'll be back with us. Thank you. The Niners made it a priority in the offseason to improve that defense, and it has paid dividends. They opened up their wallets to Dee Ford and Quan Alexander, in addition to drafting Nick Bosa. San Fran shelled out over $112 million in guarantees to defensive players in the 2019 league year, the second most in the NFL, behind only the Cowboys. Clearly, they will face Kyler Murray, who's athletic in all kind of different ways. Rob, what's the key for that defense tonight?
It's playing well on all three levels. So the front, the linebackers in the secondary, I think right now they've played really well.
On the flip side, what do you expect from that Cardinals offense? Woody, give us Woody's roundup, if you will.
Well, obviously a lot's been made coming into the season about this air raid offense and a lot of the misdirection and things that Kyler Murray and this offense will be showing us. And so they're going to need to tap into every part of that offense in order for them to be successful against a really, really good defense that Buzz here just went over a few seconds ago.
You got that right, Woody.
All right, Steve, you're the rookie Kyler Murray, and you're going up against that Niners defense that has not missed a beat. What's your plan of attack?
Well, where'd you get the Ninkovich-sized costume?
it's a little tight.
It's a rental, tight. Steve. It's a rental.
It looks like
it's a little short.
Does he need to? I'm sorry, Wendy. No worries.
Here, I'll ask again. If you're Kyler Murray and you're a young quarterback with limited experience, but obviously you're extremely athletic, what's your game plan tonight against that very good San Francisco defense?
Well, I think that defense is going to – that's scaring everybody on Wednesday. It's not just Sunday. It's all week long. And that's when defenses get into your head. And I think that Kyler's built perfectly for this, right? He's a rookie. He doesn't have a lot of stuff running around his head from a lot of years of all the scars. And he can just be free. And I just would unleash him tonight and just – and try to put pressure on this defense in unique ways, which he can do, because this defensive line are, they're mauling people. And so to me, I don't want him thinking too much tonight. I just want him to be the college player, Kyler Murray, and just make a bunch of plays and see if he can put this defense in a little bit of bind. They need to get to that secondary. Nobody's been able to expose the secondary. They're good, but they're not great. And he needs to be able to get to that secondary and see if they can get to make some big plays.
Steve, thank you. And JoJo, he makes a good point. Why not just turn him loose and see what's possible?
Well, I think what's really exciting about this matchup is getting to see two coaches who are very innovative on offense go against one another in Cliff Kingsbury and also Kyle Shanahan. And the fact that they're getting more comfortable, especially Kyler Murray with Cliff over and over, and how that's now starting to translate, especially when there are still teams in the NFL who have not won a game. So at least they're having a little bit of success. And I recently just covered the Patriots and Browns game, and it was interesting when you're talking about how good the 49ers defense is compared to the Patriots defense, and to have a guy like Kyle Van Noy tell me that he feels like the difference between the Patriots defense is that they do it all on a string with their communication, whereas he feels like the 49ers defense actually is getting it more done with their front up front. So it'll be just interesting to see how stout that defense is versus someone as innovative as Cliff, and also having a rookie quarterback go up against that.
I love
as well.
The chess match aspect of it. I mean, that's what makes it fun. We're going to continue to have fun here on
NFL
Live. It's a party. From tricks now to trades, we've seen an uptick in action around the deadline in recent years. This year, an impressive 13 trades done within 2 weeks of the league's deadline day. Consider the caliber of players as well. 6 featured former Pro Bowl selections. All right, so time for a little trade or treating, JoJo. Bo Peep, I should say. All right, look, we're going to talk most impactful trades. Doesn't have to be the day of. We saw one trade that day, but really within the past few weeks, we've seen a number of notable names on the move. So, what you got?
Well, I'm going to go with a treat because Jalen Ramsey has been such a starburst of an impact on that Rams secondary. And, I mean, he has done exactly what they've needed. You talk about helping them to get wins against Julio Jones without even playing 3 games before and the Bengals. We can talk about how hard that really was. But the fact of the matter is they got 2 more wins in the column with Aqib Talib gone, with Marcus Peters gone, doing that with guys like Nickell Robey-Coleman on the other side and playing that nickel as well. So far it looks like it's been a good deal for the Rams.
Yeah, so far so good. All right, Woody?
Woody has a lifesaver for the New York Giants because acquiring Leonard Williams is going to help that defensive line get pressure on the quarterback, get after that quarterback, and have another presence there to really get after. I mean, that's the one thing that the Giants that we're accustomed to seeing. Traditionally, we always understood that Giants always had a vaulted defensive line that would get after the quarterback and apply pressure to that position. They haven't done so consistently this year. So Leonard Williams should be the catalyst to get that defense going a little bit, get that defensive line going, and get some pressure on the quarterback.
Well done. Buzz?
I'm going with Mohamed Sanu, New England Patriots, a Milky Way.
Why Milky Way?
Because he plays well in space.
Sanu, there we go.
Really, really a great that. Player in space.
I see what you did there.
You know, so when you add him to the offense, he's only been there a week, but there are things that the New England Patriots this year on offense are lacking. A little bit of size as far as red zone. They don't have the tight end like they used to have in Rob Gronkowski. So you saw some of the issues earlier in the season. They go out and they get a guy like Mohamed Sanu who can play outside, he can play inside. If Sanu can be the guy that they think he is, I think that offense can play out of this world. So I think that it's just up to them to get on the same page, and it takes a little bit of time, but he's been there a week, and he's going to be there for the rest
out of this world.
By the way, the defense already playing.
Not from this world.
Yeah, okay. Listen, new on NFL Live, please save us, Adam Schefter, an update on Joe Flacco. After a second opinion on the bulging disc in his neck, Broncos quarterback Joe Flacco now expected to be sidelined 4 to 6 weeks. That's reviews from a pair of doctors per a source. The thinking now is no surgery necessary pending those doctor reviews. One matchup to watch on Thursday Night Football, Nick Bosa and Kyler Murray, the top 2 picks in the NFL draft in April. Murray has 3 300-yard passing outings in 8 career games. He's riding a good run of 148 straight pass attempts without throwing a pick. And then there's Bosa. He's earned NFC Defensive Player of the Week honors for his play last week after becoming only the 3rd rookie to record 3 sacks and an interception in a single game. We take a look now at the Modelo Gold Standard stat. Just an amazing start for Bosa, Nick, that is, who has 7 sacks and 1 pick through 7 career games. Get this, since Sacks became official in 82, the only player to produce those marks in his first seven games, like Bosa, is Julius Peppers. And like Bosa, Peppers also a number two overall pick in the NFL draft. We go back out to Duke Kaboom from Arizona. Duke, what do you hear? Assuming you can still hear, what do you hear about these two in their early stages of their NFL career? Yeah.
Well, Wendy, the NFL is still seeing red when it comes to Kyler Murray. Many sources I've spoke to around the league believe, Nick Bosa is probably a better player right now, but that Murray will be a factor for a long time. I spoke with one defensive coordinator who's played Murray this year. He texted me back one word about his skill set, beast. And then he said he will absolutely be a great player in this league for years to come. One Cardinal source I just spoke to put it perfectly. They said there are about 3 to 4 plays every game where it's a 7 to 10 yard loss, a sack in the backfield. Murray spins off him, makes it into like a 5 or a 7 yard gain. And so that's one of the most important things in the NFL right now. And then many league sources I've spoke to said that Nick Bosa is probably a better fit for San Francisco because he's a true 4-3 D end. He would have to be more of an outside linebacker in the Cardinal scheme. So Murray, it's a good fit for the Cardinals. They built their entire offense around him. And Wendy, I literally cannot see a thing in this mask. So we're going to turn it back to you.
You know what, Duke? I believe you. But we appreciate your good sport. Thank you. Now on ESPN.com, NFL rookie rankings as 6 analysts weighed in at the midway point of the season. And you see Nick Bosa right there at the top for San Francisco. And they needed that defense to improve, and improve it has. As we say hello from our Domino's pregame headquarters. And listen, let's talk about this for just a minute, because Arizona had to make a decision, right, in April. And a year after, they took a quarterback with their first pick in the draft. Did they make the right decision in drafting Kyler Murray instead of Nick Bosa, even again, a year after doing the same thing?
What I feel like they did, when you look at, you know, in terms of team need, I feel like when you look at the San Francisco 49ers, they needed some pass rushing. They needed someone to get after the quarterback. And that's what you looked at from that perspective. But I think when you look at the Cardinals, they wanted a bona fide number one quarterback. And they wanted to have their franchise quarterback. And I think they just didn't believe Josh Rosen was that guy for them. So they went out and drafted Kyler Murray. And so far, I believe it's still a work in progress, but they're paying dividends. And he's understanding. And you can tell with each and every game, he's learning more and more and more on the fly. So this is only going to benefit him in his career, getting this playing time under his belt, understanding who he is, understanding how to play the quarterback position at this level. But I do feel like Nick Bosa went to the perfect place for him in terms of fit. So I think both teams won in terms of getting what they were looking for. But both guys are just even fits with their respective teams, in my opinion.
And just remember, at the time, it wasn't just Nick Bosa who was on the board. It was also Quinnen Williams. And I covered the draft. I was there in Arizona at the time that they were picking. And I remember that a source had said that someone in the building had, you know, let people around Kyler Murray know that they were going to most likely go in that direction. But you see how they're trying to build around Kyler Murray. The fact that they drafted 3 wide receivers around him, and Andy Isabella, Hakeem Butler, and also Keyshawn Johnson, giving him weapons that he can also grow and develop with. We'll see how that continues to unfold, and if it was the right decision in terms of if they have success in the future. But so far, at least they've gotten some wins on the board, and I think it was the right decision in the sense that this was the perfect coach to go with this specific quarterback and to try to make it flourish from there.
I would agree. I like that they didn't just get one piece of that puzzle. They knew they wanted that tandem together, and, and we'll see. But off to an okay start.
I agree.
Yep.
So, you know, when you look at a team that is in need of a quarterback, it was a perfect fit, just like you said. And I agree with Vic here. Look, the teams, when you look at a team that's in need of a quarterback versus a pass rusher, I mean, the Arizona Cardinals have Chandler Jones, and they're able to get after the quarterback. So when you look at Arizona, I think that sky's the limit. Obviously, he's a rookie, and there's a learning curve here and a process. But when you look at a defensive player and a quarterback, if you can find a good quarterback, they can play a lot longer than a defensive player can. So, you know, I think right now both teams won, and, you know, we'll see moving forward. But look, we don't have a crystal ball here. If you're going into the draft, you're like, look, in week 8, Bosa would have 7 sacks and he'd be the MVP candidate for a defensive player of the year. people would be like, what? What are you crazy? But it's not as a defensive player. It's the secondary. It's the linebackers. It's the guys next to you that help you produce. As a quarterback, it's the same thing. It's your offensive line. It's the receivers. So there's a lot of things that go into being successful.
And you know also what helped pave the way for Kyler Murray going to Arizona is the success that Baker Mayfield had had the year before, also working with the same coach, being a shorter quarterback. Both GMs at the time talking about how both quarterbacks, even at their size, didn't have that many batted passes in college. And it remains to be seen on a larger scale with a larger sample how that plays over time.
Yep.
All right, it's fitting we talk about an Andy on today's show, as he lacked enough toys on offense this season, especially with injuries to A.J. Green and that offensive line. Here is Andy Dalton on the Bengals' decision to bench him and opt instead for rookie Ryan Finley.
It happened 3 hours before the trade deadline. You know, it's, I wish it would have at least, you know, if he was thinking about it, at least let me try to see if I could end up somewhere else, or, you know, at least see if there is interest in possibly getting traded. At that point, the way it was all handled, there wasn't enough time to even have that happen.
Tuesday was the NFL's trade deadline. Jamal Adams started the day as a Jet, and then despite some speculation and rumors throughout the afternoon, he ended the day as a New York Jet. The only issue is that left for some hurt feelings and miscommunication, apparently, between what was actually happening between Adams and the team. Here's what he had to say.
I hold myself at a high level. You know, the Rams don't take calls on Aaron Donald. The Patriots don't take calls on Tom Brady. You know what I mean? That's where I hold myself in that regard. So regardless of, I understand that you have a job to do, that's the way I took it. When I found out that I was being shot and that, you know, I was on the verge of being traded, you know, that was one of the teams that I told him I would love to go to. And it was to go to the Dallas Cowboys. People got to understand, man, I'm born and raised in Dallas. I find out everything, every little thing you can think of. Michael Irvin is like my uncle. I find out everything. So, you know, everybody's coming at me in certain ways to say I'm a liar about a lot of things, or I'm not believing in something. That's not true. You know, I'm always shoot you straight. I'm never going to sugarcoat anything. But like I said, man, I told RC that, you know, that was definitely a spot that I would love to land.
Well, look, that's a layer. There's a lot of layers there. But what we can agree on, I think, is that you have a passionate young player who, you know, is sort of learning the ins and outs of the NFL as a business. Victor, what's your thoughts on specifically what he had to say with regards to whether the Jets took calls or shopped him or whatever? Really just semantics.
Well, I think in you know, what he's thinking about is he's in a team that obviously he's accustomed to being around. He understands the team there. He feels like, not feels like, he is the leader on that team. He embraces that. He wears that C on his jersey for a reason. But he has to understand that when the team isn't doing well, and the team obviously overall, they're looking to get better at every position. So when a team is looking to get better and they aren't doing well, they're taking calls on everybody. They're picking up the phone and entertaining calls on everybody on their roster. And if they get a deal that they like, that's good enough and something that's enticing for them, they'll take it. And that's what he has to understand, is that the team isn't doing well and they're looking to get better over the long haul. And if that means trading Jamal Adams for a boatload of picks and getting better overall over time through the draft and through different players and through different trades, they have to entertain that, especially given where the Jets stand today.
It's just how it works. And I understand there's a human element to it. You don't want to ever dismiss that because, you know, these are real people. But that is how it works. And this team, JoJo, has to get better at some point.
I think what you're seeing is a player who knows that he's really talented, at the same time trying to process feelings of, you know, whether he feels appreciated and valued and how much that was communicated and how clearly. You also heard him talk about the fact that he says, I'm shooting y'all straight. I'm shooting y'all straight. But it's not really about whether he's shooting us straight. It's about whether the information that he received is accurate as to what actually occurred in the front office when calls are coming. And then lastly, you know, he's also talking about, oh, now he's letting us know that he did display interest and wanting to go to the Cowboys. But at the time that he was on Twitter, none of that was illuminated. The focus was on, well, I didn't ask for a trade demand. So after, you know, he didn't get traded, and then after he's getting pressed about whether he was interested or not, now you're starting to see things come, you know, back to, you know, some of the things that we were saying. All in all, he's a great player. You know, you learn through these things, you develop, nobody is perfect, and he should just go back out on the field and give his best.
That's right. That's really the best course of action, I would think, Buzz, at this point.
I just think the as fast as you can when you first become in the, when you first enter the NFL, you start to look at it like, okay, you don't understand the business side of things. Once you realize that the number that you have on does not reflect your name, because there are no names, there's just a board of numbers. And they don't care about your name. They don't care about what type of person you are. They just want to know, can you produce and can you add value to our team? Mm-hmm. If you're on the team or if we trade you. So if they trade somebody for value, at the end of the day, they just want to win football games. They're not winning, obviously. And they want to make money. It's a business. So when they can do that, if they could trade somebody before he gets paid or trade a guy and get a couple picks, they're not trading the player's name. They're just, okay, get rid of 33. Hey, let's bring in two guys.
Let's bring another 33.
Like, and when I was a player, I was 50, right? There was a 50 before me, Mike Vrabel, but he was 50. There's another 50. There's always going to be a new guy in the number, right?
And there's still humans in the jerseys, and so you understand that, you know, there's still a
sure.
component
Yeah, we understand
there
the feelings for
the,
sure.
The guys making those decisions, they don't really care about, you know, it's just, it's a business.
Just the way it goes.
Right now, time for a cauldron of Joe, if you will. No cups today, because it's Halloween. So we're going to stir right through this, get the scoop.
Yeah,
I don't have
anything.
Very good, Wendy. Okay. Let's start, obviously, with Trent Williams, who ended his holdout, wasn't traded. But where do we stand and what's been happening from a procedure standpoint?
Yeah, well, procedurally right now, he did come back right before the trade deadline, and the Washington Redskins have been given a 2-week roster exemption, which allows them to carry 54 players and not having to cut one to make it down to that 53 roster. Now, he came back right in time after the 8 games, which kind of follows the threshold set by Joey Galloway in 1999 in that arbitration where the Seahawks rather tried to toll his contract and not have him be able to hit free agency. So that's why he tried to do it now. So the question is, you know, after this 2 weeks runs up, what are they going to do with this helmet situation in terms of why he failed this physical? And is it going to work? Is it not going to work? If it does not work, then they can put him on the non-football injury list and decide whether to pay him or not pay him. And then the Redskins have to come up with their decision as to whether they're going to file a grievance to have this season not count and then make him have another year still to be eligible for unrestricted
It was
agency.
An odd turn of events.
Yes.
You know, the whole week for Trent Williams was a little bit unusual. meanwhile, Cleveland has struggled. We know that. They came in with very high expectations. We saw Baker Mayfield lose his cool just a bit this week. What's the take on not just Baker, but what's the feeling there in Cleveland as they face adversity?
Well, I talked to a Brown source last night who saw the press conference where Baker stormed off, and he agreed that he probably should have handled that in a different way, basically saying that you always have to remember that the reporter is going to get the last word. And then he also says that he feels like players today are running too quickly to go to social media to air out their grievances. And as far as the tweet goes, he really didn't have a problem with it until the last line where Baker Mayfield said, and if anybody is offended along the way, too bad. The source said that really kind of sounded like a bleep off to everybody, and it would have been better off to basically say, I'm sorry. When it comes to Odell Beckham Jr., we know that he just had that game against the Patriots in which he felt like he wasn't targeted enough, basically 5-for-7. I asked the Brown source, how do you feel about this assertion, especially since that was a game that was raining? He basically said to me, hey, listen, if guys are going to play 7 to 8 yards off of Odell, rain or shine, we need to not make this complicated. Just get on the darn ball. If they're going to play chicken, you know what, with him, let's make sure that we get it to the guy that we not only traded for that has over $90 million in terms of this contract, and make him proliferate in a way that you know that he is a pulse guy. He helps to set the tone for the rest of the locker room, and you want guys like him and Jarvis happy.
Yeah, Odell Beckham, it's a better situation when he's not unhappy. We've seen that before. JoJo, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Up next for the Patriots, we talked about the Patriots against the Browns, will be the Baltimore Ravens, and that means they'll get a first look at Lamar Jackson, a first look this season anyway, and we know he is electric with the football in his hands, but we've seen him throw more from the pocket this season. But here's the thing. He will face that Patriots defense, which really has not missed a beat. Here's Bill Belichick.
They use a lot of mobile scrambling quarterbacks this year, but does Lamar Jackson take it to another level?
He's very fast, yeah. He's had great production.
What do you see out of him as a passing tool?
Good. Yeah, it's good.
Well, Steve Young, oh, there you are. Steve, back with us. Steve.
You know, by the way, Chris Mortensen just texted me and said, I've gone to a new low. So
no, he told me the same thing. I got that same text. I agreed. Right. I agreed. So we're
maybe
fine.
So.
There we are. Welcome to the cellar. All right, listen, what should Lamar Jackson's approach be on Sunday night against New England?
You know, they're going to try to make him look like a rookie, and he's not. And they're going to try to take away his legs more than anything. And, you know, Bill Belichick, you're going to try to show him a bunch of looks. And so I think, to me, when you play the Patriots, keep it simple. Even though they're going to try to make it complex, do not go down that rabbit hole, right? Just stay simple in your mind. If they get you, shake their hand, tell them great job, and get them the next play. And just keep making plays. I mean, the Patriots' defense is a cut above because of their tactics, and they get into your head, and they just don't allow it. Just keep going and just try to make a lot of athletic plays.
All right, Steve, thank you. That's about all you can do against that defense. And the 49ers and Patriots are the league's two remaining unbeaten teams. Offense certainly sells tickets, but these squads boast two of the spookiest defenses. Both have allowed the two lowest QBRs to opposing quarterbacks this season. These units also rank top two in the NFL in both scoring defenses and yards per play. And with that, it's time for another edition of Cruise Control. Victor,
here we are.
In the driver's seat, we'll ask the questions, and he tells us the road he'll travel.
Yes.
And yes, we're still dressed like this.
Our Toy Story Halloween edition.
Okay.
It's all day here. I'm driving home like this.
He's not kidding. Okay, listen, the spookiest defense. We got two choices. I just indicated they're the top in the league, the Patriots and the 49ers. Who's spookier?
Okay, so to me, this is about the spookiest defense, right? And to me, when you see Nick Bosa line up and you see Richard Sherman on the outside and you see the way that these guys get after the quarterback, I've got to go because I'm scared of bats, Wendy. I don't know about you, but I'm scared of bats.
No, so I love
I'm going
them.
With the 49ers being the spookiest defense in the NFL. Robert, you're itching over here. I see you moving around in your costume.
I disagree.
What's going on?
With you on that one. I very much so disagree with you. And I'm just going to write something here, and I want you guys to see it. 25 takeaways. Mm-hmm. 25 takeaways on that defense. That's scary. That's spooky, right? If you're an offense, 25 takeaways, the ability to turn the ball over, that's how you win football games. You lose them offensively, giving the football away. So I'm going to go with the boogeymen here because they have a nickname. Yes, they have a nickname, that's spooky, the boogeymen, right?
Kind of, sort of.
But anyway, you got to go with the takeaways. I'm going.
To get perspective,
I'm not a homer on
the
this
Niners
one.
Have 16 takeaways.
Oh, yeah, that's,
not
16,
too shabby.
25, that's a similar
not
number.
Too
okay,
shabby.
Well, first
themselves.
Of all,
we'll let JoJo break the tie.
Okay. Only one defense has actually made a quarterback see ghosts. So I think that's the benefit.
Look at you.
Only one Patriots defense has made a quarterback and a team have turnovers in their first three plays to end the game last week in Foxborough against the Browns.
All right, nicely done, by the way. Matt Breda, by the way, will
good
play
point.
Tonight. Jeremy Fowler just reporting
still
that.
Going with the Niners, but
okay.
Here we go.
Well, I thought JoJo made a very good point. All right, listen, we move on, and we referenced this earlier, but Baker Mayfield got into a little bit of a testy exchange Wednesday with a reporter. Then he abruptly walked out of his media availability. Here's what he was being asked and what was said.
After that blocked field goal at the end of the first half, 2 minutes it seems like there was a lack of urgency there or something going on.
There was a penalty, so we were negative yardage.
I know, but there was a lot of time between snaps.
When the penalty happened, then we're
like
behind the chains.
No,
stop saying but. I just told you the clock was running and we had a penalty. Do you want to give them the ball back? No, you don't play. You don't know it. That's just plain and simple. Was I happy with the drive? No, we didn't score points. It's the dumbest question you could ask. What? Jesus, Tony.
All right, then. It's been a rough go for Baker and for Sam Darnold. Both rank among the worst in the NFL in completion rate, and both have piled up the picks. Baker's 12 interceptions were tied with Jameis Winston for most in the league. All right. Whose haunted year will continue into the second half of the season?
Well, when you look at these both of their teams, not just players, I just think that the Cleveland Browns have more talent on their team to kind of come back from and more talent overall to kind of come back from this. And the way my guy Sam was seeing ghosts, he's going to need a superhero to kind of help him get out of that.
And
when
like
I just look at the Jets and the talent that they have, or the lack thereof, so to speak, and the struggles that they're having, I just don't see any upside for this team. I just don't see where they're going. And obviously they're trying to, you know, they were listening to trade offers and listening to opportunities to trade Jamal Adams. So you have to look at that as them trying to hit the reset button a little bit and to try to retool and build for the future. And I think his Sam Darnold's quarterback woes will continue throughout the rest of this year.
Yeah, I'm going to switch it up here. I just feel like I have to. Look.
Tell me why, Rob.
I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to tell you why. Because there was a lot of talk going into this season, right?
Okay.
A lot of hot air. And a lot of arguments going on, you know, social media, your media members, people, interviews, walking out of interviews. Look at this guy. Said had a mistake on air, live TV. I think he's handled it with class. He said he was seeing ghosts. Guess what? You don't see him walking out of interviews. I think Baker might have walked out of
interviews. He can't hide from what he said.
No, he owned up to it. He said, yeah, it happens sometimes. He owned up to it. So I give him credit for being able to stand there and take it on the chin like a man. I feel like Baker runs away from his problems a little bit, just like he did in that interview. So I'm going to say that Baker's going to continue. He's throwing his, I mean, how many picks on the year? It's not good.
How many?
Well, Sam and Darnold's doing it in New York.
He's the worst.
I agree.
You agree, yeah?
No, I agree with that point you just made.
I think from a
talent perspective, don't they have more talent to right the ship?
The
That's the question. Whose haunted year will continue? I think they have
right,
enough talent to right the ship.
The team is not up here. It's the two quarterbacks.
Yes.
So I'm going to break the tie with Ninko saying I actually feel like Baker potentially will have the more haunted year.
They're going against me because it's Halloween,
he said more things to create more pressure on himself to then maybe haunt himself with some of the things that he said. Whereas this guy, even though he said he was seeing ghosts, he's embraced the comment, not running from it, and hasn't said as much around.
But that haunted year will still continue for these guys,
well,
believe
we'll
it or
see.
Not.
I thought it was the two players.
What do you agree with? I agree with you guys. I do. I like the way he's handled things. And that's
looks
in
like
New
you don't
York
need me
with
here,
that
so.
Media. So to me, you know, we'll see. I think ultimately he'll get this right. All right, Tom Brady, you've heard of him, and Julian Edelman have been quite the duo together in New England. Brady has thrown 524 completions to Edelman, the second most to any receiver in his career, behind one Wes Welker. Here is Brady and Edelman at Disney World's Toy Story Land after their latest Super Bowl win.
Where are we?
Disney World.
Too bad our little girls aren't here with us.
I know. Two girls.
Toy Story ride.
Toy Story is here.
That's right.
Who's Buzz Lightyear and who's Woody? That's the question.
Woody.
Am I Woody?
Yeah, of course.
You're the sheriff, bro.
All right, maybe look, there is no confusion here.
What a moment that was.
We don't have to.
I'm going
to
clarify. I'm Buzz Lightyear.
Thanks for working that out.
And I'm Woody.
Yeah,
he's Woody.
Kind of could tell there. Yep, got it.
Okay, just so we're clear.
All right, we got a Forky in the road.
Ooh, I like what you did there,
because
Jesse.
We added three here. So the tandem you believe in most, obviously we're putting Brady and Edelman up there, Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, and then Drew Brees, who's back and looks fine, with Thomas.
Look, all of these guys are tremendous athletes and tremendous players. Obviously, Drew Brees and Mike Thomas have just been off the charts the last two seasons. I don't even need to speak on Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, but when you go to this longevity and just two guys that understand each other and play together and they understand the nuances of each other's game, and obviously they're heralded, they've won championships together, multiple championships together, you gotta go with Tom Brady and Julian Edelman, man. I mean, the guys just understand how to get it done. Julian Edelman just plays tough year in and year out. Those two guys just are on the same page every single year, and that's because they work hard in practice. That's because they're on the same page in the meeting rooms, and it shows each and every week on the game field.
They are always on the same page.
I'm going to add
waiting
to that.
Waiting for a rebuttal.
I'm going to add to that.
Here we go.
Rebuttal here.
Okay.
I think you're
going to
get agreement, but I think you're going to
you
get something.
You see this here? It's a bus.
That's a trick-or-treat bus?
You can count on the bus. You can count on its schedule. It's going to be there. It's going to be there. You know that these guys are putting in the time. They're putting in the work. They're going to be there. They're going to be in the playoffs. I know 11's going to make some big plays. I know 12's going to put it on them on the numbers. So I've had a lot of candy so far today. I'm doing good in my outfit. I'm just saying. That duo, I played for the Patriots, but you can't deny the things that they've done.
You are
100%.
Not disagreeing with this. I mean, come on. We already know this is what it is right here.
Oops. Whoa, look at the buses.
All the buses.
We're all aboard.
All on schedule.
An update from Devontae Adams, courtesy of our Packers reporter, Rob Demoski. He is in a helmet and pads for the first time since his September 26th turf toe injury. Another sign he is on track to return Sunday against the Chargers. This one is very green, but can we get the I like the next level right here. Thank with you. He's obviously from Toy Story, little army green man, green army man, something like
Wendy?
That. Wendy? Matthew Berry, anyway.
Morning to duty.
Yes, okay. Nicely done. Listen, we're not going to call it love-hate this week, okay?
Sure.
It'll be a little trick or treat, maybe, or something like that? The good and the bad? Okay.
I get it.
All right, you get it.
I get
it.
The premise. I'm on board. I'm clearly on board with the concept.
Clearly, you have embraced the concept. So
100%.
Where shall we start? The good side, right? The treats?
Yes, the treats.
The treats.
The treats.
Okay, good.
And Philip Lindsay in Denver is a treat this week, Wednesday. Well, Wendy, I should say. Whatever, I'm covered in green. What do you want? Hey, 17 touches in three of his last four games. He's been involved in the passing game as well with at least four catches in five of eight games this season. You think about the Browns, who allow the fourth most rushing yards per game this season. What are they going to do, let Brandon Allen throw it? A heavy run game for both Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman. They should find success against Cleveland. However, another treat, I should say, another treat is Allen Robinson of the Chicago Bears with five or more catches in five straight games, at least 60 yards in all those games. He's the part of the Bears passing offense that is absolutely working. And over 56% of his fantasy points come on the perimeter. That's important because the Eagles allow a league-high 154 yards per game and the most perimeter touchdowns in the NFL to perimeter wide receivers. That's an area where you can attack Philadelphia. And then Gardner Minshew, a very popular Halloween costume this year. Gardner Minshew is also somebody that should be in your lineups this week. 21 fantasy points in three of his last four. Houston has given up at least three touchdown passes in four straight games. So Minshew mania takes to London as well.
Might be the give Jorts. Me some tricks, which if we were doing another show,
yeah. Unfortunately,
great.
Sony Michel, who's been a treat for so many weeks this year, but he makes the trick list this week, right? I'm outside my top 25. Look, Nick Chubb, the only running back to have over 65 rushing yards in a game against the Ravens this season. They allow just 1.1 yards per carry after first contact. That's lowest in the NFL. Since week five, Baltimore also the fifth best red zone defense. He's not involved in the passing game that much. Again, I am outside my top 20. Listen, scary Terry McLaurin. I love him. My favorite player on the Redskins right now. But unfortunately, tough matchup at Buffalo. Remember, McLaurin, four fewer catches in four straight games as that offense has really struggled. And obviously some tough matchups here. Buffalo allowing the fifth fewest fantasy points to opposing wide receivers. The fourth lowest completion percentage sent this year. McLaurin also outside my top 20. And then finally, Jacoby Brissett at Pittsburgh. Look, he's failed to throw a touchdown in two of his last three games. The Steelers are the sixth best red zone defense this season, and why does that matter? Brissett actually ranks third in fantasy points among quarterbacks in red zone fantasy points, but outside the red zone, he's averaging, he's like 25th. So he really needs red zone fantasy points. That's where a strength of the Steelers defense is. I have Brissett outside my top 12 for the week.
Okay, let me ask you this. You're doing a Halloween edition of the fantasy show, yes?
We are indeed.
Are you doing something else? Or
I am doing something else. I have to take all this up.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm. This
You're
is
do
purely
this twice.
For this. Yes, yes.
We have, you did that for this.
I did this for this. For
you
guys.
Player,
I was told it was Toy Story theme and Buddy
well,
and Woods were taken. So
yeah.
There you go.
Well, you did a good job. All right, listen.
Thank you.
Catch the Halloween edition of the Fantasy Show. All right, this is the time of the week that we often play a little quarterback bingo, right? But not today. A little different edition. We've got the cauldron. We've got some quarterback questions. I'm going to pull it out. Oh, which quarterback? See?
Which. I see what
okay.
you did there.
I'm supposed to use this, but oh, it's hot. I'm not going to. I'm just going to do this. Steve Young is back with us, and I pulled out the Patriots, which would be a question about Tom Brady, but it's not. It's a question, and Rob, you can chime in after Steve, about who or which quarterback will we see start in New England next year? Will it be Tom Brady or someone else?
Well, I think... You know, Tom has set it up so that he has a choice. He can retire and go to somewhere else. I think in the end, Robert Kraft will not allow Tom Brady to play in another place. He'll promise him half the team, equity in the team going forward. He'll promise him, you know, whatever it takes to finish his last year of his career. I wonder if Tom, if he is going to play till he's 45 and he wants to play 3 years more somewhere else. But I don't believe that anybody but Tom Brady will play for the Patriots if Tom Brady's not retired.
Yeah, I agree, Steve. You know, just with the history there and the amount of years and all the tradition and things that they've been able to accomplish, it'd be hard for me to see Tom Brady on another team, as Wendy laughs at me right now.
Sorry. To be fair, I'm laughing at you both. Look at us, Steve. Look at us.
So I just don't see it. I think Tom's going to be there next year. Unless they win the Super Bowl. If they win a Super Bowl, maybe he rides off into the sunset, but I see him back.
Okay, listen. Here we go again. Ooh, it's hot. Ooh, hot. What's in that? I wish it was. But anyway, this is Carolina. So JoJo and Steve, who should start for the Panthers when Cam Newton is healthy, Cam or Kyle Allen?
JoJo, you take it first, JoJo. You take this one.
Well, you know, even though one of our comrades here on the set,
Victor Cruz.
aka Woody, feels like it should be Kyle Allen because he's held the ship so valiantly in the absence of Cam Newton. I feel like you cannot forget the quarterback that took you to the Super Bowl. You cannot forget the quarterback who has been holding down the ship the whole time and that he should not lose his job because of injury. And now that Kyle Allen's come back a little bit down the sides after the team lost to the 49ers, granted it's a great defense, and I think Cam Newton, when he's healthy, should return to his spot. Steve?
Yeah, it's hard to believe that Cam, when he is 100% healthy, you don't put him on the field. One of the most prolific, you know, athletes in NFL history. The real question to me, Joe, is that, you know, this is binary. It's not like, oh, we'll have Kyle play and Cam can sit the bench. I mean, this is really, is Kyle going to be the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers for the next 10 years, or is Cam going to be the quarterback for the next 5 years? And I think that question is a little more interesting to me. I kind of feel like Kyle Allen will be the quarterback for the next 10 years. I just don't know how they're going to make that
choice.
Here's the thing, Steve. You got to make sure you're not just on a magic carpet ride.
I like it, Steve.
And then if something happens and he falls off the grid, you're like, oh, we had
Kyle
that guy
Allen
named Cam Newton.
Has proven that he can withstand the heat and still keep it going. Obviously, they had a blunder against the 49ers.
They're a good defense.
Nick Bosa is going to wreak havoc. That entire defensive line, I get it. But in terms of having a quarterback that understands his role, at least right now, don't turn the ball over. I know he's had some fumbles, but that happens. He's not used to having the ball in his hands. But he hasn't thrown an interception, and he understands how to play the game, and he's keeping the team in it. I know 49ers was one of those anomaly games, put up 51 points. But he's keeping them in it, and he's giving the ball to his playmakers and letting them handle their business. I like Cal Allen for the Carolina Panthers.
All right, one more. Ooh, hot, 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 hot. Okay, let's see. Oh! Minshew Mania.
Minshew Mania.
Wow. It's basically the same question.
Same question.
Steve, Nick Foles or Gardner Minshew once Foles is ready to roll?
Yeah, you know, this one's a little easier in my mind. I think as long as Gardner is above 500, I think you let him keep playing this out because he's a young kid. You can say he can play for another 10 years or he could be that franchise quarterback. It feels like it's possible, kind of a Tony Romo kind of scenario. And that is not to say Nick Foles is not one of the great players of all time, but my gosh, I just don't know how you put Gardner, if he continues to perform and grow and not doesn't plateau or flatten. And I think that's the big issue. If he continues to grow and play well, I think he just, I don't know how they're going to deal with it because both of them are such good guys. You could have them go back and forth for a little while. But in the long run, the question is who's going to play for the next 10 years? I got a sense that I'm going to be Gardner Minshew, not Nick Foles.
Steve, again, I agree with you. There's going to be little Bo Pete here to my right who doesn't agree with what you're saying because of the aforementioned Kyle Allen, Cam Newton situation. But I agree with you. If he is handling the quarterback duties the right way, and not only handling, he's making plays, he's dancing in the pocket, getting away from guys and making those big time throws down the field. As long as he's continuing to do that, I believe he will continue to be the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Steve, I agree with you.
I think the mania has gotten into your brain as well.
I think so. I think
it's the mania.
Steve's going with Gardner too.
Well, he's an alien right now. he's an alien. Nick Foles. You paid the man. Let him play.
Well, time for making smarter decisions, informed by IBM Watson. Tevin Coleman had a huge game against the Panthers last week, scoring 4 touchdowns, the most by a Niners player in a game since Jerry Rice in 1993. Watson gives Coleman a ceiling of 22.9 points tonight against the Cardinals. Week 9 underway tonight. Here's how we stand as we pick them on Thursday Night Football. Where's my alien? We're going to let him pick first. He's got to get back to space, I guess. Steve?
We lost
Steve.
Oh,
no. Oh,
there he is.
Speaking of the 49ers, is a really dynamic young quarterback with not a lot of scars on him, and that's Kyler Murray. And so I think this game could be more interesting. I could easily say 40-10, but I don't think it's going to be. I think it's going to be tighter. I think the 49ers win. And why don't I just say, like, 28-17. But I think Kyler Murray is going to make some plays and make this interesting.
All right, fair enough, Steve. Thank you. Josina?
Well, how could you not root for or say that the 49ers are going to win with the way that they've been playing? So I'm going to pick them. And what was my score? 38-24 over the Cardinals.
Okay. And I'm going to go with the 49ers. I just think that they're playing well. Thursday night football always seems to be a little bit tighter. So I'm going 27-13 49ers.
Well, I agree with you, Rob, and I also agree with you, JoJo. I'm going with the 49ers, 34-10. I do think Kyler Murray comes to life a little bit. I think we're going to see some different things out of Kyler Murray in that offense, but I think that 49er defense is going to be too strong, and Jimmy G and those boys will get after him.
Bigger impact, Bosa or Kyler Murray tonight?
I'm going to say Kyler Murray because he'll have the ball in his hands a little bit more than Bosa, and Bosa, the opportunities for Kyler Murray to do more and make an impact will be higher because he'll have the ball in his hands.
I'm going with Bosa because the secondary and the linebacking core, it's the whole
just play
group.
Defense.
It's the whole group.
Defense
it's
guy.
Defense.
Well, look, are you going to answer, Buzz?
Look, yeah.
Do I have I did pick an offense.
I have an opinion.
I have an
if you didn't hear Jeremy Fowler's report, Matt Breida will play tonight. Listen, we're going to make it a clean sweep again. I just can't pick against the 49ers. 24-10. I'm not optimistic we won't see more points, but we'll see. That's where it stands, so we'll all be right or we'll all be wrong.
Wait, guys, Andy's coming. Andy's coming.
Got a friend.